weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Well, a big thanks to Beto Da Silva for driving us through the afternoon. It is Tuesday, September 3rd. I'm Shane Dawson and you are listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7pm, Siobhan Madigan has all the latest from day 6 of the Paralympic Games as we look forward to a couple of swimming finals this evening. Paul Corry and Mark Langdon begin our build-up to Ireland's matches against England and Greece, round up all of the latest European football news and reflect on a big, big weekend of League of Ireland action at both ends of the table. Journalist Alice Chambers dials in with all the news on the row erupting on the iconic Liffey swim. We'll also wrap up all of today's news headlines. As always, if you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp 087-187-9200, or we are on X, formerly Twitter, at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Good evening. Welcome along to the show. Welcome along to an hour of sport. Paul Corry is already in studio. Paul, how are you, sir?
I'm very well, Shane. Very well. It always feels like a slow week of football and international break, doesn't it?
It does. It does.
Not too many midweek fixtures.
But do you know what the glorious thing is? We have a League of Ireland match on Thursday. We have a League of Ireland match on Friday.
Big games as well.
Huge games. So just ease us into the international break. So
yeah, there's a lot to play for in the League of Ireland.
There most certainly is, and we will be getting to that in detail. I know you were at the Dublin Derby on Sunday.
Brilliant game. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant game. And I actually enjoyed the early kickoff. I know it's not for absolutely everybody and it probably didn't suit everyone, but it was a lovely way to start a Sunday morning. And actually the product between Shamrock and Rovers was excellent on the day. Plenty of drama, plenty of chances, and a lot of good play in between. And for Bows, who were down near the bottom of the table, I never really thought they were in trouble, Shane, but it was a performance and 3 points that they certainly, certainly needed.
Yeah. I was at the real Dublin Derby on Sunday, by the way. United Liverpool. So
yeah. Big one.
I say that tongue in cheek before the text board lights up in League of Ireland, but I'm a staunch League of Ireland fan. I do not.
Shells won last week, don't you?
News headlines before we get into the nuts and bolts of football. Sam Maguire, fake trophy being used for profit in Armagh's county officials warn of a scam. The real Sam Maguire Cup was, of course, won by Armagh in July. A counterfeit Sam Maguire trophy is being toured in Armagh in exchange for substantial amounts of money, their county board has warned this afternoon. Orchard County supporters are, of course, still celebrating their All-Ireland title. And why wouldn't they be? Their last was in 2002. A 22-year wait is over. But the statement from Armagh GA today, and it is quite serious, has warned of a fake Sam Maguire in circulation as scammers have created a fake edition of the famous trophy. It read, Armagh GA have been made aware of a counterfeit Sam Maguire trophy being taken around a number of pubs, event venues and schools in exchange for substantial amounts of money. Armagh GA have clearly established guidelines and methods for requesting the use or appearance of the Sam Maguire and will never charge for this, never, all capital letters there. So strong words from Armagh GA, so be aware if you're offered a fake Sam Maguire trophy in Armagh. In boxing, TJ Donny put in a brave effort as he lost by 7th round stoppage due to injury against undisputed super bantamweight champion Naoya Inoue in Japan this afternoon. The Portlaoise fighter was a huge underdog against his unbeaten opponent and had the battle to stay in the fight for the first 6 rounds. Inoue had won 24 of his 27 fights by stoppage before this bout and is a 4-weight world champion. I believe his nickname is The Monster. And the fight was stopped just 17 seconds into round 7 with Donny indicating he had suffered a back injury and was unable to continue. It was an admirable performance by Donny against one of the stars of the sport who many believe is on a path to becoming one of the greatest the sport has ever seen. Donny was helped from the ring after the fight due to the back problem and must now consider whether to continue after missing this chance to become a 2-time world champion. So disappointment for TJ Donaghy, and we wish him all the best with that injury and hopefully it isn't too serious. And finally, Munster fullback Emer Considine has been called up to the Ireland squad ahead of next week's test with Australia in Belfast. The 33-year-old is drafted into Scott Beaman's 35-player camp this week after Connacht's Maeve Dealey was ruled out of the game with the Wallaroos on Saturday, September 14th, after suffering an ankle injury in her side's Interpro win against Ulster at the weekend. Considine, who has won 26 caps, hasn't been involved with Ireland since April 2022, but is a very experienced option for Beaman to draw from the UL Bozeman. Didn't feature for Ireland in the 2023 Six Nations due to the birth of her first child earlier that year, while she has only recently returned to action following an ACL injury, which she picked up 10 months ago. As well as Dealey, Munster's Jane Clawsley has also left the Irish camp due to injury. The back row, who is a daughter of former Munster and Ireland prop Peter Clawsley, had been one of six additional training panellists to complement the 35-player squad. However, a knee injury has ended her camp. And the Irish players are in camp preparing to face England. And we are going to be previewing that now with Paul Corry, and Mark Langdon joins us. Before I get the thoughts of the lads, we can hear from Casey McIntyre, Ireland's newest recruit. He was speaking to the Established Press earlier on this afternoon.
First met him to Stephen Kenny, obviously during his time here, and obviously, you know, getting everything sorted out, passport stuff and that, it can take up some time, but you know, I got it sorted in the end, and that's what brings me here. Yeah, definitely. You know, I felt like I was wanted here. Having chats with John O'Shea, like I mentioned, Stephen Kenny in the past, felt very in contact with the country, and just wanted to get started as soon as possible. Yeah, so my late grandma, she was from County Offaly. She was born there, grew up there, and then moved down to Birmingham when she grew up into her 20s, and then down to Northampton, where eventually she settled down with my grandfather. And then obviously I have my mum and my aunties and uncles, and that's where the bloodlines are. My late uncle Joey was a massive, you know, follower of Ireland. Everywhere he went, he wore a little Irish badge and always reminded me that my blood is with Ireland. So that was always drilled into me from young, and obviously I've followed in them footsteps now, so hopefully he can be proud and looking down on me. Yeah, there's seven of them coming over. They're all looking forward to it. I had a phone call with them last night, my mum and dad, and they said they're really excited. I think my mum started packing out for some weird reason, but you know, they're all excited to be coming over, and I'm sure they'll have a great time.
This was coming through Leicester. You were probably about 14, 15 when they won the Premier League. What, did you have any interaction with the first team, and what sort of players were you styling yourself on?
Yeah, so I think the one that just comes straight to my head really is Jamie Vardy. Obviously, he was that season, the 14-15 season when they won the league, was unbelievable. You know, his story coming from non-league all the way to the Premier League, and then obviously finishing the title. And obviously back then I was ball boy every week as well, so watching the team week in, week out, and getting the results, and obviously which finally led him on to winning the league. And obviously everyone saw the celebrations that brought. And now to being in a dressing room where I can call him my teammate, you take a lot in from his past experiences and what he gives down now to the younger guys coming through like me. So yeah, it's really a really good thing to have in Jamie, and I'll just try and learn day by day with him.
Just in terms of your personal development over the last few years, you went down the leagues for a screen, Wimbledon, a good season, then in the Championship. Do you think that's all set you up now for the Premier League and, as a result, international football?
Yeah, definitely. Like you just touched on there, going down into League Two, you really have to learn the hard way. You know, you don't really get the luxury of being looked after like you do in the Championship and Premier League. You have to, you know, go down to them leagues and suffer at times. And then, like you say, touched on there, coming into the Championship, I felt like it was my time to really, you know, have a stamp on things at my club at Leicester. A few injuries held me back during the season, but you know, I managed to come through with them, and I feel stronger day by day. And hopefully, I can just take that forward into going into the Premier League. Obviously, like, it's the best league in the world, in my opinion. So hopefully, I can take that. And every time I get to play in the Premier League, I can show what I can do. Yeah, so I'd like to say my biggest strength is my running power. I like to run. I think you tell by my long legs that it's probably one of my biggest assets. But yeah, I can play, you know, a number of positions. Obviously, growing up at Leicester, you learn different positions you can play. So I've played in the past at wing back and the wing and centre midfield, left wing, and in the 10, it's I can play in a variety. If I could narrow it down, I'd probably say right or left wing. That's definitely where I've learned most of my things in the past year or so. But at the end of the day, I'll do a job wherever I get put on the pitch, and hopefully I can deliver my best. In training, I've been playing on the wing or in the middle, in the 10 role. But like I say, I'll play wherever the gaffer wants to play me. And I'll always give my best for the country, and hopefully I can deliver my things that I give to the team. When I started speaking to the Republic as well, it was also a lot of interest shown, and that was like an ongoing thing with phone calls, emails, etc. And that's when I wanted to take it further forward, getting, you know, my passport, my Irish citizenship done and dusted with. So I'm glad I got that done, and that's what brings me here, and hopefully I can give my best to this country.
So that was Casey McIntyre speaking to the media, including RTE's Ed Leahy and a few others earlier on today. We bring Mark Langdon into the conversation. First and foremost, Mark, how are you, sir? It's been a while.
I'm good, thank you. Yeah, I had a sort of holiday just
that's allowed
after the year. Yeah, you do sort of have to feel like you make excuses when it's during the football season, but I had to wait for the kid after the Euros. I had to wait for the kids to get on the school holidays before we could get away. So it didn't mean I missed a start, but yeah, I'm what it does mean is I'm sort of raring to go now, really. Yeah. So, yeah, all good. Thank you.
Raring to go just as we hit an international window. I don't know if that's a, if that's a good thing or not. Listen, we just heard from Casey McAteer there. We mightn't see him play from the start against Ireland England. We're kind of just diving already into a preview, and there's lots of narratives and lots of avenues we will explore over the course of the next 15, 20 minutes with yourself and Paul. But Casey McAteer, how excited should Ireland fans be about this young man?
Well, there's certainly been some, I'd say, positive noise around him from sort of growing through those Leicester ranks. And I think any, you know, when I've watched Ireland in recent years, you know, the ability to create opportunities and score them as well. But I think he's somebody that can definitely create sort of those moments and unlock a defence. And he spoke there about his running power and speed and obviously the ability to play in the 10 position. I think he, you know, as many good players as what Ireland can get on the pitch, I think they need to be able to do it in that final third. Because I think what we've seen with a lot of nations is that actually international football, if you defend well and then kind of, you know, if it's on the counter-attack, and I expect Ireland to maybe sort of change the style from what we saw previously under Stephen Kenny and maybe go back to kind of what was the style previously. I don't know if you guys agree with that, but I certainly think the new manager, from when I saw him with Iceland, was somebody that was more counter-attacking sort of based and not so interested in possession. You just need people that can create those moments, and he's definitely somebody. I haven't seen huge amounts of him, but I'd like to say that there is some sort of belief, I think, that he is a very talented player.
Well, Paul Curry, would you agree with the change in style that we might see for matches against England and Greece?
Yeah, I agree with Mark. I think particularly that England game, I don't think you're going to have a situation where, you know, Quevin Keller, who's dropping the ball down, playing through his back four and trying to create angles and play through England. I think it'd be very much a pragmatic setup, probably more in tune with what we saw in previous regimes than maybe the one that we saw under Stephen in recent months and recent years. And I think that makes sense, particularly when you're coming up against such a high caliber opposition like England. But I think as you progress then into the Greece game, I think the expectation amongst the public anyway would be that we should be able to mix a little more against a team in and around our ranking. And maybe that's when you start to see a little more of the midfield trying to get on the ball and then obviously create those moments like Mark mentioned in the final third. So it will certainly be more pragmatic. It won't be as open. The pitch won't be made nice and expansive and expecting to play through the middle of the pitch and through the thirds. It will be pick and choose your moments. It'll be difficult to beat, and it will be, you know, it'll be set up with an element of discipline in mind.
Mm. We have a new Irish manager, Hamer Halgrimsson. Mark Langdon, England have a new manager, an interim manager in Lee Carsey. So how different might their style and approach be?
Yeah, I mean, he was somebody that played good football with the under-21s, no doubt about that. They obviously won the Euros, but those that watched the kind of the progression under Carsey were, I think, very impressed with the way that they tried to be front foot. And that was obviously an accusation against Gareth Southgate that he was reactionary and didn't really necessarily make the best use of some of those attacking talents. And I think that another strength of Carsley is his ability to sort of find new positions for people. So Anthony Gordon, for instance, in that European Championship success, played as a centre forward, as an example, a position that he probably didn't even feel like he could play himself, and yet he did very well there. As far as England are concerned, I think it's a no-risk appointment. You can have a look, see whether sort of Carsley's good enough over the next few months, and if he is, maybe give him the job full-time. If it doesn't go well, you can always say, well, it was just an interim, and they can then look around it in a few months' time, because at the moment, there might not be that many sort of managers that make appeal, but who knows what that situation looks like in 6 months. Maybe Eddie Howe is not at Newcastle anymore, you know, as one example. I think there's obviously this dream of Pep Guardiola potentially leaving Man City at the end of the season and then becoming England manager. I think that's probably a little bit too hopeful at the moment. But yeah, it sort of, I think from the FA's point of view, it's a free shot, and I'm interested to see. I think he's made some decent picks. Gomez from Lille, I think, is definitely one that came from left field. But you always want that, I think, from a new manager to not keep it the same and to try to sort of stamp your own authority on the squad.
Gomez is actually an interesting one, because if you actually look back at some of the clips of Carsley's team and how they play, they're very progressive of, you know, dropping the ball, making the pitch big and trying to play through the thirds. Gomez is the one that almost sits in that position in front of the back four and tries to connect the play a lot. Probably similar to what maybe a Kobe Mainoo might do or a Declan Rice in that position, but has obviously gone off to France after being at Manchester and done particularly well in that position. But Mark, just bringing it back to Carsley and looking at these two games, he's obviously done extremely well with the 21s. The FA like to promote from within, but does he need to win both of these games?
I think it becomes difficult if he doesn't have a good Nations League. Even though Nations League is low down on sort of English football priorities, or, you know, when they were sort of relegated, there was no kind of there was not an exactly a roots and branch investigation into what went wrong. It was just, you know, kind of who cares type moment. But I think this is different. This is an opportunity for Carsley, who, you know, his reputation isn't amazing among the general English supporters. You know, not a lot of them will watch England under 21s. Some of them will remember him as a kind of middling Premier League player that, wasn't sort of, you know, one of the top players of his generation. There'll be some England fans that will be expecting a bigger name to be the manager. So I think it is an important Nations League campaign for Carsley, because if he does well, then he puts himself in absolutely prime position. If he doesn't do well, I think it becomes very difficult for the FA to say, this is our guy to take us forward to the next World Cup, given that he hasn't got that kind of big name playing career behind him, or the managerial kind of experience of sort of taking a Premier League team. So I think this is probably a bigger Nations League for Lee Carsley than what it is for England, if that makes sense.
No, that's a very valid point. And it will, I suppose, all piece together very soon.
I think if he can guess, because like the names jump out off the page with the amount of talent that they have, but what Southgate seemed to struggle with was actually piecing it all together and getting the most out of the big players. If you think of Phil Foden, struggled in the European Championships to hit the same sort of heights that he did at Man City. Trent was in and out of the team. I think if he can find a recipe and find a setup that works for those players and really gets the most out of them, I think he's got a really good opportunity.
Same could be said for Ireland, getting the most out of the players. And just before we move on to broader European football chat, and we will be continuing our build-up all throughout the week, we'll hear from Hamer Halgrimsson, we'll hear from Lee Carsley, we'll be chatting about Ireland-England in detail as the week goes on. Just Mark was mentioning there about Lee Carsley and his playing career as well, and that kind of put the question in my head, Paul, about Hamer Halgrimsson looking for that, I won't quote him exactly, but looking for that tough tackling in your face player that will have a bit of bite to him. Who's that going to be for Ireland, you feel? Have one with Josh Cullen not being there?
Yeah, I don't really know, to be honest with you. It feels like when you look down through the Irish team and the squad that he's picked, that we've been looking at these players for probably 4 or 5 years now. There doesn't seem to be a huge amount of changes outside of Casey McAteer coming into the squad and Sammy Smodic in recent windows. It feels like we've been working with the same number of players. It's a good question. Like, there's elements of Jason Malumbi's game that definitely fit that sort of character or personality that he's looking for. But for me, having played in that position, Jason Malumbi doesn't do enough for me in the middle of the park. I think far too often he actually runs out of midfield and leaves massive gaps behind him. So it's not Malumbi for me. Alan Brown is quite an energetic, tough tackling midfielder. He might look like somebody like that who's maybe getting further on in his career, where he doesn't want to be box to box and maybe sit in front of the back four and shield and give you that sort of level of protection in front of your back four. But I think, irrespective of who that person is, Shane, I think the message that he's trying to get across is that he wants to play with a little more, you know, protection, particularly in front of that back four. Don't be surprised if it's a four or five at the back. Let's just say it's a four. If we play, I think, with two sitting midfielders, I think that's something that you could expect. And then it'll be, the onus will be on the front players then, when they have those opportunities, whether it be Ogbeni or Smodics or Ferguson, whoever that might be, to go and create moments at the top end of the pitch. It's not going to be a situation where we're going to be looking to dominate the ball.
Yeah, and that is a whole other conversation as well about the squad and who was exactly picking the squad, how much input John O'Shea had as well, and our setup and everything. But we will be talking, all about that in due course. However, broader European football points. Mark Langdon, we have joked on this show about Bayern never losing. Well, they have lost for the first time in what, over 400 days, Mark?
Yeah, it was at 462, just over 450 anyway. 51 matches, so a great effort, first of all, from
in the league, right?
Leverkusen to go over a year without losing. So, first of all, probably just need to sort of doff our cap to Xabi Alonso. But he, I think, as would be in keeping with somebody that's expected to go right to the top of the managerial game, was furious afterwards with the way that Leverkusen lost that game 3-2 to Leipzig. They were 2-0 up, absolutely cruising, defensive mistake, and the game turned. And I think he's maybe seen some signs this year of whether the team's resting on their laurels or maybe thinks they're better than what they are. Because even against Borussia Mönchengladbach, they conceded a couple of goals and won it very late on. Now, they did that a lot last season as well. Some people suggesting that actually this is a good thing, and that it was just becoming too much for the players to kind of deal with. Like, you never lose, and like they can now just go on and kind of be a normal football team again, if that makes sense, rather than trying to protect this defensive record. But that was put to Xabi Alonso, and he was having none of it. He's not happy with the way that they've started the season, and I think that makes it a big season for Leverkusen and Alonso, because being linked with Liverpool and Real Madrid and Bayern Munich, and on the back of what was a phenomenal season last year, to go invincible in the league and also do the domestic double, reach the Europa League final as well. But I suppose it's, can you go again? Can you actually get even more out of this team, or maintain, if not the results, at least the standards? And I think that's the bit he's been most disappointed with this, to start of this season. The standards have dropped somewhat. So that, I think, will be one to watch over the next couple of months. Can they go back to having that hunger that they showed last season? All of a sudden, that they've kind of won it all, and it's about trying to go again. And that's what separates kind of the real elite from the rest, really. That, look at Man City, they just go again and again and again. And by Leverkusen, not in that class, admittedly, but from an attitude point of view, Alonso not happy.
Yeah, and it's hard to keep a squad like that motivated. I'm actually surprised, just looking at the team from last week, that one or two of them didn't get their moves. And I'm sure there's a, Jonathan Tah was linked with Bayern Munich. He didn't get his moves. He can't be, massively happy being there. And I thought Florian Wirtz might have attracted a couple of suitors and might have taken a punt on him. And Leverkusen certainly wouldn't be one of the top players across Europe. So if a big deal or a big move did come across for one of those players, I'm sure they absolutely would have wanted out the door.
So the first domestic defeat in quite a long time. Perhaps teams taking a leaf out of the Atalanta playbook in that regard. You mentioned Real Madrid, La Liga. Kylian Mbappe got his first La Liga goal, so he's up and running. However, Mark Langdon, talk to me about the row that is erupting in Italy. What's going on in Serie A?
Yeah, so this it was a pretty mundane sort of draw between two teams, Lazio and AC Milan, who are not not started the season on fire. Paolo Fonseca, the new Milan manager, wasn't happy with the first couple of performances. Dropped, I think I would say, two of his absolute sort of stars, really, both on the left-hand side. Teo Hernandez, the French left-back, and Rafael Leao, the Portuguese flying winger. If they were on the market, they would definitely, I think, be Milan's two sort of most expensive players, the two that are instantly recognisable. Fonseca, a couple of games into the new season, just dropped them both, wasn't happy with their attitude. He then brought them on when they were losing at Lazio, helped to combine for Tammy Abraham to make it 2-2. Shortly afterwards, very hot in the capital, so they had a sort of cooling break in the second half. When the team sort of joined together to go and have a drink, Teo Hernandez and Rafael Leao just stood on the opposite wing and didn't join their teammates or manager in kind of the huddle to sort of go through I suppose some tactical tinkerings or whatever, and that was seen as really bad form from them too. Obviously, weren't happy about being dropped. Paolo Di Canio was a pundit on Sky TV, I think it was, in Italy, certainly Italian TV, and absolutely slaughtered the pair of them, as you'd imagine. He's not somebody that minces his words, and was basically saying that some of the Milan teammates should, grab them by the throat in the dressing room and shake them up, was the general gist of it. That was controversial, I suppose, in itself. But Rafael Leao then posted a picture of Di Canio doing the fascist salute that caused much controversy in Italy back in these playing days, and was sort of questioning, why he should be taking advice from somebody like Paolo Di Canio. So Rafael Leao sort of bit back at Di Canio, but I think the kind of overriding message there was that it was really poor form from Hernandez and Rafael Leao. I mean, like, that's not what you would expect, I think, of professional footballers in that instance. Maybe feel like they're bigger than the team and bigger than their teammates, and putting unnecessary pressure on a new manager that's only just walked through the door. So will be interesting to see how that one sort of plays out, I would say, over the next few weeks, because Milan are better with those two in the team, but only if they want to be part of a team and don't see themselves as bigger than the club.
Well, on that dramatic story, we're going to leave our European football conversation there. Mark, I will let you go. Thank you so much for dialing in. Great chatting, as always. And we didn't even get to Victor Osimhen going to Galatasaray. Your own Chelsea missing out, Paul, on that one. Ronald Koeman slamming Steven Bergwijn's Saudi move. And the new Saints striker, Brad Young, going from playing football in the Welsh League, and he's going to be plying his trade now in Saudi Arabia, just 21 years of age, going from the Welsh Premier League, where he was the Golden Boot winner.
Who is that man's agent?
That's where it's at. I really, there's a backstory to that that we will research, and we're going to have a whole segment on Brad Young and his career inside. I'm going to keep an eye on it now. Going, I think he's playing against Ronaldo, playing alongside Kurt Zouma and a few other household names, and I'm sure there's household names in the Welsh Premier League. But however, talk to me about the League of Ireland, Paul Corrie. You were at Bows Rovers, as you mentioned at the start of the show. Now listen, you and I text out of hours, and you did predict it. I must say, I must reveal to all our listeners, you sent me a WhatsApp and you said, you know what, I have a feeling Bows might get one over Rovers. What made you think that?
I said it to Damien O'Mara on the weekend as well, and he wasn't singing from the same hymn sheet. I don't know. I just think
he's a Bows man. He's playing it down.
I thought it was a quick turnaround for Shamrock Rovers after the game in Europe last week, and their league form obviously hasn't been brilliant this year either. They've lost a huge number of games, and I've actually seen a lot of Bows in Daily Mount in recent weeks, and I think they've been really good. I think a couple of results there that haven't gone their way in moments within games where they should have put chances away and put games to bed, and then they haven't done, and then they've conceded in the other end. And I just thought it was starting to come together for Alan Reynolds, and you could definitely see sparks within games of what it is he's trying to do with the players that he has, and Bows just put it together. I mean, there was definitely an opportunity, Shane, when Shamrock Rovers were 1-0 ahead to go 2-0 ahead. Mark McNulty had a brilliant chance, and Dara Burns had a rebound from probably about 8-9 yards that he skied over the bar and out of the stadium. That would have made it a very different game, but as the game kind of progressed along, Bows seemed to get to grips with things, and the goals were really well worked. There was other opportunities. Dale Rooney hit the post. But by and large, I think they probably wanted a little more than Shamrock Rovers. As the game went on, Shamrock Rovers looked a little more tired, and Bows were fully deserving, I thought, of the 3 points. Mm.
You mentioned good performances, Dalymount, with a long overdue victory. They're bottom of the table on home form, 16 points.
I think that was their first win in the league since, I could be wrong, but I think it's since April.
April, May, yeah. Yeah, so it was, when I say long overdue, most certainly long overdue win at Dalymount. So happy Bohemian fans of a Sunday morning. Elsewhere in the League of Ireland, we'll get the Pats defeating Drogheda 4-1, and Sligo had a victory over Waterford. You cannot predict Sligo's matches and their form in general, but John Russell was back after a suspension, and they got a home victory over Waterford. However, in terms of the title race, Shelburne are now 3 points ahead of Derry City with a game in hand. They travel to the aforementioned Dalymount Park on Friday. So Shell's got their first league victory in Oriel Park, as I think, from the top of my head, since 2012.
Wow.
Didn't win up there in any match except the Leinster Senior Cup match since promotion. I know that much anyway. So yeah, not a happy hunting ground for Shell's Oriel Park. A couple of draws, but they were long overdue a victory over there. They got that. Galway defeated Derry 1-0. How big of a weekend in terms of the title race are those two matches in particular, Paul?
Yeah, it felt big. I was actually watching the Shell's game, and then my phone lit up to notify me that Galway gone 1-0 up against Derry, and it just felt like a huge swing last Friday. And for Shells, I think getting back to winning ways but also getting back to keeping clean sheets was vitally important, because I think what is going to get Shells over the line if they do win the league is clean sheets. I mean, 31 goals in 28 games, so you don't, it doesn't scream,
it's very like Italian.
It is very, very Italian. But I'm also correct in saying, I think, Shane, that other than a 1-1 draw against Drogheda when they went ahead, every other game that Shelburne have led in, they've gone on to win.
Yeah,
so scoring the first goal certainly gives them a really good platform to go on and win games, and that back four, back five clean sheets is absolutely the route to winning this league, because teams are dropping points and they might not need to win a huge amount more between the now and the end of the year, with just how inconsistent Derry have been, and the dropping of points, particularly against Galway last week, was a really poor result. Given how much was at stake, given how tight it is,
that's a very tough place to go playing John Caulfield Galway.
And John Caulfield and Galway have done very well, similar to Shelburne, and being very difficult to break down. But I still think, given the period of the season that we're in, if you're a big side and you're really pushing to go and win the league, I think you go to Galway and you at least don't lose. You make sure that you keep on the, you know, within touching distance of Shells. But as it stands, if Shells go and win their game in hand, they're 6 points ahead with what will it be, only 7 games to go. So it puts them in a fantastic position, and it certainly felt last Friday with those two results that it could be the week that maybe swung the lead in Shells' favour.
Okay. Now, Shells do have to go to Galway away, they've got the Rovers, they've got the Tallaght, and they play, of course, Derry away, so they've three very difficult away fixtures. However, if you mentioned about their home form as well, and they play Pats at home, Sligo at home, Sligo at home, and then Pats, the rescheduled match of a Monday night, and then Waterford at home and Drogheda at home as well, so home form is going to be key here.
I think you'd have to fancy, if Shells win on Friday against Bowes and go 6 points clear of Derry with six games to go, then you would have to fancy them from there. Sorry, it would be seven games to go. 6 points clear of seven games to go.
Yeah, Derry's
surely
match.
Shane, I know you're reluctant to say it.
They're mathematically safe. Europe, they might get Europe, who knows. It's going to be an intriguing title race. At the other end of the table, then big defeat for Drogheda, with Pats coming into form, and with rescheduled matches for Pats now. I think they might have to play Bowes, Rovers and Shells, a few Dublin derbies in a row as well, but they're coming into a bit of form as well, and Sligo's victory over Waterford. So at the opposite end of the table, and again from Bohemians' point of view, that was a huge win to extend that bit of breathing room over Drogheda.
Yeah, I think what the wins for Pats and Bowes have done, when you look at the table, is it's really opened up that gap now between Drogheda and those other two teams. So it looks as if it's going to be a straight fight between Dundalk and Drogheda to, I guess, fight for that playoff spot. I'd be a little more worried for Dundalk than I would for Drogheda. I think Drogheda have experience of being in this situation. They've got players within their squad who know how to dig in and fight and win games. And I think there's been a real change in form since Gary Deegan has come back into the team, who is that sort of leader from the middle of the park who will marshal people around him and has that experience of knowing how to get points when maybe you're within a dogfight, or getting three when maybe it looks like you're only going to get one. And I fancy Drogheda, Shane. I really do, to get that playoff place. I think Dundalk, with the recruitment over the last couple of years, the players that they have in the building right now.
Now, they looked all right on Friday. I was up in Oriel Park, and Conor Cairns made some brilliant saves. The chance cleared off the line. They had their moments, but I suppose they don't have those moments consistently.
Yeah, and Drogheda have picked up. I think that is the other side of the story. Like, Drogheda have picked up points in recent weeks, and even if you go to that Sligo game where they beat them 7-0, I mean, that would have done them a world of good. But I just think in recent weeks there was a period, right, where Drogheda looked like they were dead and buried. They were losing a hell of a lot of games. It feels like they've turned a corner since they were Kev Doherty, and what it is they've managed to do with the team, and picking up points is so valuable. Like, in the last five games, Shane, Drogheda have the second most points. Drogheda have picked up 8 points in the last five games. And if they can continue, it doesn't even have to be in line with that form, but if they can find any sort of wins over the next couple of weeks, I think Dundalk are going to find it very, very difficult to stay with them. And I believe the last game of the season,
Drogheda Dundalk. Loud Derby. Shells Derry. This league, Paul. This league. I love it. Right. We are taking an ad break. We're going to be dialing into Siobhan Madigan in Paris at the Paralympic Games. But up next, we are going to be chatting to Alice Chambers of The Currency because there's a row erupting over the Liffey swim. Stay with us here on Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Hey, you're very welcome back to Game On as we turn our attention to swimming, but more so the politics out of the water in swimming and the Liffey swim in particular, because I'm delighted to say that Alice Chambers of The Currency joins us on the line now. Alice, first off, how are you?
Hiya, Shane. Thanks very much for having me on.
No problem at all. Thanks so much for taking the call. Listen, I was reading your own articles in The Currency detailing a lot about the Liffey swim. There's a bit on the Dunleary swim as well. So there's a lot at play here. And Samantha Liberari had a story in the RT website as well, which basically it comes down to there's going to be two separate Liffey swims that have been organised this month due to a row over who should host the historic contest. Like, what is happening? Lay it out for us, Alice.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I suppose that's where we are now. There's two groups involved in this. There's Swim Ireland, who's the national governing body of swimming here in Ireland. And there's the Leinster Open Sea Group, who have traditionally run these big races, the Liffey Swim. And you mentioned the Harbour Swim in Dunleary, but we'll focus on the Liffey. The Swim Ireland is organising a Liffey Swim for the 7th of September, so this coming Saturday, and Leinster Open Sea is organising one for 2 weeks later on the 21st of September. And what it comes down to is a dispute over governance, which has actually been going on for quite some time, but came to a head earlier this year when Swim Ireland refused to affiliate Leinster Open Sea as a Swim Ireland club.
Okay. So the mediation that we had and the recognising of bodies and other bodies and that has broken down earlier this summer in July. Like, are we going to see these organisations get back down at the table and talk to each other? Is it too late for that now?
Well, it's a really interesting question. I mean, it seems both organisations say they're open to working with the other, but both organisations are also adamant on their own positions. So Swim Ireland says they've organised the Liffey Swim for this coming weekend and they're not going to change that. And Leinster Open Sea have said that they've organised their Liffey Swim for the 21st of September and they're not going to change that. So it seems like we're at a bit of an impasse.
Mm.
As you say, mediation broke down. That was in over the summer. Swim Ireland say they're still open to mediation and that Leinster Open Sea refused to meet with them. Leinster Open Sea say that they disagree with that characterisation and they say that the last mediation session was cancelled by Swim Ireland and that Swim Ireland hasn't given them the documents that they want to see before mediation continues. Although swimmers I've spoken to have said that they really want this dispute to be resolved and both sides have said the same thing, it's difficult to see a path forward currently. Mm.
As you detailed in your article on The Currency, so Ronan Dalton, last year's men's Liffey swim winner, is boycotting the Swim Ireland event. Now, a quote he mentioned, as again in your own article, Alice, I'll swim in the event organised by the group who's always organised them, speaking to yourself and The Currency. Like, we're at a point now where we have spoken on the show about Daniel Whiffen, Mona McSharry, and now shortly later on this evening show, we're going to be looking forward to swimming finals in the Paralympic Games as well. This is a really good moment for Swim Ireland and for, I hate the phrase minority sport, to really be front and centre and it's promoting swimming. And now we have a story like this. How damaging is it for Irish swimming, this story at this particular time?
From talking to swimmers in the community, I think everyone's really disappointed at a time that should be such a high for swimming in Ireland, that this dispute that seems unresolvable is taking place. And that's both sides have told me that they're very disappointed with the situation.
It is frustrating. It's disappointing. Just before I do let you go, Alice, and hopefully there is a resolution. Listen, I know there's not much time between now and Saturday, and it would seem largely that this isn't going to be resolved and there are going to be two swims and there's going to be a split field and everything else. But you did mention as well, and you've done a bit of work on the Dunleary Harbour swim as well, which isn't straightforward either.
No, well, I suppose when at the very, very start of the year, Leinster Open Sea said that their harbour race was going to be on this date and then their Liffey swim was going to be on that date. And when relations broke down with Swim Ireland Swim Ireland then took over those dates and said that they didn't want the races to be at risk and that they would continue to run on those dates. And that's part of this very complicated dispute, because Leinster Open Sea say that, you know, they'd booked those dates and they for various reasons they felt they couldn't run them with Swim Ireland. So they've gone and organized their own dates. Now the Swim Ireland Harbour Swim happened in August. The Leinster Open Sea Harbour Swim is supposed to happen this weekend, the same date as the Swim Ireland Liffey Swim, and then the Leinster Open Sea Liffey Swim will happen on the 21st of September.
So there'll be plenty of options for our Irish swimmers and budding Irish swimmers. Listen,
well,
Alice.
I mean, the clubs are split.
They very much are. They very much are. It's a fascinating tale and a story that I reckon is continuing to unfold even throughout this week. But for now, Alice Chambers of The Currency, thanks so much for detailing all of that. Speaking of swimming, we are going to cross live to Siobhan Madigan at Paris, because there has been good news for Para Olympians in the pool in Paris and plenty more besides as well. Stick with us here as we get our Paralympic Games update.
Game on 2FM.
Now, RTE Sports' Siobhan Madigan joins us from Paris on day 6 of the Paralympic Games, and it has been yet another busy day for Team Ireland athlete Siobhan.
Absolutely a busy day, and hopes are high now that this evening the Team Ireland medal bandwagon will rev up its engines once again, as expectations are high that perhaps one and if not two medals could be on our way over the next hour or so. Firstly, the Irish flag bearer Orla Comerford, she'd had to wait her turn. It's been 6 days since she marched down the Champs-Élysées leading the Irish team out. She definitely wasn't walking this morning in her heat of the T13 100 metres though. The Raheny Shamrock sprinter oozed both confidence and class in winning her heat in 12.02 seconds, a little bit slower than the first of the semi-final in the event, but I think it was the ease with which Comerford crossed that finish line this morning, knowing that qualification was assured, and that indicated to me at least that this girl looks to be on top of her game here in Paris. She has struggled with a lot of injury over the last couple of years, and she was forced to miss the entire track season in 2022, but she looks to be back with a bang, and she could really announce her reintroduction to the sport with a good showing in tonight's finals, not too far away here at Stade de France. An improvement, though, on our personal best of 11.90 from a Morton Stadium run earlier this year is what she has in mind when I spoke to her earlier on.
Like, obviously, I'd have liked to run that faster and done a heat in a sub-12, but, like, a 12.02, I can't really complain. Like, I think the final is where it matters most, so I'm just saving up the good stuff for later.
Do you think you'll have to go sub-12?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. It's going to have to be a decisive sub-12. Hopefully a personal best. That's what every athlete looks to do when they come to the biggest stage and, you know, where they're hoping to peak for the season. So, fingers crossed.
And as you say, you have plenty of support in the stands. Yes. There's a lot of people over from North Dublin.
Yeah, there was a big noise I could hear. Now, there was a French girl in my race, so obviously the big cheer went up for the French girl. But I think the Irish rivaled the French there. You know, the girls, my friends, family, everyone, like, they're so phenomenal. The support is outstanding. So I'm incredibly lucky.
Incredibly lucky she is. And as she says there, she won't be lacking for support here. I was speaking with her mom and her dad and her two brothers, Morgan and Gavin, there a little while ago. The Raheny public are here in huge numbers to roar around. There's a group of about 70 of them, and what a racket they were making outside the stadium. So watch out for them if you can in the next 20 minutes or so, when Orla will be going to the blocks in the 100 metres. Roisin Nurian will be going to the blocks very soon. She has a silver medal already in her gear bag. The Limerick swimmer back in finals action. She's just 19. She goes in the final of the SM13 200 metres individual medley, having placed second in her heat this morning. She's qualified third fastest for the medal race this evening, and it goes to the blocks shortly. She spoke with Eamon Horan earlier today.
Yeah, it's a solid morning swim and job done this morning, just to get out, feel good, have a good swim and make it back tonight. And I was able to do that, so happy with it.
Have you more to give?
I'd like to think I have more to give. You know, that's always the aim of an evening swim, is to go faster than you do in the morning. But I wanted to put out a solid effort there this morning, and I'm happy I did that.
And the fact that you've already secured a podium place here, does it give you a bit of a swagger going into these other events?
I mean, it definitely gives you a bit of confidence for sure, but you know, it's kind of reset every single race, you know, good or bad, that's the way I try to look at it. So it's going into today with a clear and fresh mindset and just to give my best again.
And Roisin is one of four Irish swimmers in finals action, but there has been three through the water already. Disappointment for Dervla Brady and for Nicole Turner a short time ago in the 50 metres butterfly. Brady, however, in what is her debut games, finished fifth in the final and for the first time in her life broke the 38-second mark in a competitive swim with a time of 37.67. But Turner, who won a medal in the event in Tokyo, finished sixth in the slower 38.59. And there was an eighth place finish for the 22-year-old Newtown Ards swimmer Barry McClements in the S19 100 metre breaststroke final. His strongest event is the 100 butterfly, and that comes up on Friday when Barry McClements will be hoping for more. It was an emotional morning, though, for the Tokyo Paralympic gold medalist Ellen Keane. She has swam her last ever competitive race for Ireland, the Clontarf women, who finished fourth earlier in the week in the S9 100 breaststroke, rounded off a glittering career which has spanned five Paralympic Games from Beijing right through London, Rio, Tokyo, and now here in Paris. This morning, Ellen finished sixth in her heat of the S9 100 backstroke, her time 1:17.63. Gold, as I say, in Tokyo, bronze in Rio for 29-year-old Ellen, who spoke especially with Eamon Horan afterwards.
Oh God, I don't really know how to put it into words, I guess. I just feel so grateful. I'm really glad that I finished on an event that isn't my main one, because I just didn't feel the pressure. I just wanted to go out there and enjoy what racing feels like and enjoy kind of the routine of it. And even putting on my racing suit for the last time was awful, but I really was living in the moment of everything I was doing. And in the call room before I went out, I watched Barry make the final and I was so proud of him, and I had a little cry in the call room. My face just keeps getting wet. I don't even know it's happening.
It's an emotional day for you.
It is a really emotional day, and I knew it would be, and the last few days have been really emotional as well, and I don't even think maybe it wasn't the coming fourth that got me so emotional. It was more the support I had from everyone and the messages I was getting. I was getting so much love and support from all across the globe and Ireland, and different people I call my family, and people from different countries, and even my Dancing with the Stars family were all contacting me. So I really, really felt the love, and I really felt the moment of this is coming to an end. But I guess Winnie the Pooh said it best when he said, how lucky am I to have something so hard that makes saying goodbye so hard.
Yeah, it's goodbye for now. I'm sure we'll be seeing plenty more of Ellen Keane in the near future, but she walks away with her head held high and plenty of success from Paralympic sport for the Clontarf swimmer. There was action out at para-equestrian dressage today. Katie Hare Horan and Jessica McKenna finished 9th and 10th, respectively, in their Grade 3 individual event out at the Palace of Versailles. It was somewhat of a disappointing result, though, for the pair. They missed out on qualifying for the freestyle event with just the top eight progressing. Care Horan aboard Lycabo Donachino scored 65.87. The Cork debutante McKenna aboard Davidoff 188 received a mark of 65.33 seconds. And London-based Michael Murphy with Clever Boy also missed out on qualifying for the individual freestyle event in the Grade 1 category. His score today was 70.417. And he was 9th overall. Tomorrow, once again, the focus will be around Paris. The main attention from an Irish point of view will be on road cycling. Katie George and Levy will team up with new pilot Linda Kelly. She'll be setting her sights on defending her gold medal in the individual road race from Tokyo. On that occasion, she partnered Eve McChrystal. They've swapped it up, though, this time around. The Ballybay-based guard pilots tomorrow for the up-and-coming Josie Helian, who is in her debut games. But watch out for Linda and Katie George tomorrow, because they're targeting being on that podium once again.
Great stuff. Lots to look forward to tomorrow. Lots to look forward to this evening, as you outlined already, Siobhan. And we've about 60 seconds left. So just before I do let you go, are you hopeful that we're going to get medals this evening?
I'm hopeful that Orla Comfort can get a medal here at Stade de France. She was very, very comfortable in her heat this morning. Didn't break the 12-second mark, but says she feels it's well within her legs to do it this evening. Plenty of competition, you know, there's very, very tight margins in 100-metre sprint events, and it's all about dealing with pressure, but... Comerford, as I say, she was calm, she was cool this morning, and she didn't overdo herself. Roisin Urian, she's done it already this week, so she knows what it requires to win a medal out at the La Défense Arena. It's not her strongest event. She's not the quickest in the event, but she'll be in the shake-up, I'd say, for the medals too.
And I think it's rather appropriate. We must finish our show. Just a mention on Ellen Keane bowing out, as it's fair to say, Siobhan, one of Ireland's greatest Paralympians.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, when you think of Paralympic sports, straight away the names of Jason Smith and Michael McKillop will come to the fore. But, you know, Ellen Keane has written her own chapter in Paralympic sport over the last number of years. As I say, she went to Beijing when she was 13 years of age, and today was her final swim for Ireland at just the tender age of 29. But it's the commitment that is required from elite level athletes that has brought Ellen Keane to make her decision. And certainly the results didn't go her way this week, but she did the best that she could. She was happy with both her swims in the breaststroke and again today in the backstroke. And as I say, she's walking away with a smile on her face. She may not have a medal this time around, but she has a couple from previous games.
Oh, absolutely. Listen, for now, Siobhan Madigan, thanks so much for checking in with us from Paris. As Siobhan mentioned there, 2 minutes past seven is the final for Roisin Urian in the women's SM13 200-metre individual medley. And it is 13 minutes past seven, to be precise, for Orla Comerford's final in the T13 100 metres. And there will be reaction to all of that and all of the rest of the sport with Oisín Coyne and Morning Ireland tomorrow. But for now, a massive thank you to you for tuning in and listening to Game On. Big thanks to Ronan Lawler and Lauralee Davis for working on this evening's show. The new music show with the great January Winters is up next, so do not go anywhere. Game On is back from 6 o'clock tomorrow, and I shall speak to you then.
RTE 2FM.